Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in West Dallas, Texas, and dropped out of school at age 17. He eventually earned degrees in public school administration and became a teacher. Today, he's the president/CEO of Texans Can, which consists of 10 charter schools whose mission is to provide a second chance to at-risk youth and their families to achieve economic independence and hope for a better life through relationship-based education and training. His name, Richard Marquise, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760, WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with the president/CEO of Texans Can, which consists of 10 high schools in 5 cities in Texas, and his name, Richard Marquise. Richard, welcome. An honor to have you.
Hello, Jack. How are you?
Great. Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Both my parents came from Mexico. My mother when she was 3 years old, my father when he was 13. They met each other on a little farm outside of Ennis, Texas. And they married and eventually moved to Dallas. I was born in Dallas, Texas. I was the second child born at the hospital. All the others had been born at home. I'm number 9 in the family, so you can imagine what that was like. I went to a Catholic school, kinder through 8th grade, and was a pretty mediocre kid in terms of grades and so on and so forth. And I loved to play sports, baseball, football, basketball. You know, in those days, you could go down to the park and just about participate in any kind of sport that you wanted to. And it kept you out of trouble if you got involved and did some things. So that was my early life. You know, at 14, I left the Catholic school and went to public school. And it was my first experience at public school. And I remember that the teacher who was going to fill out our schedule, my brother and I went together. We were both freshmen. And she was going to fill out our schedule, said, asked us where we lived. And I said, well, we live in West Dallas. And so she looked at us and said, okay, then that means that you're not going to college, so I'm going to put you in the shops. So my brother and I wound up in wood shop. You know, there was no determination as to ability or anything else. It was basically where I lived. So I settled in and found high school very easy, you know. It was kind of interesting because what I would assume would have been challenging really, really wasn't. It wasn't until the second year when my older brother noticed that I had basic classes and woodshop on my schedule that he took me over to the other teacher and said, change his schedule. This kid doesn't belong here. He belongs in college classes. You need to put him in algebra and you need to put him in the other college courses. And it was kind of interesting because the teacher just looked at him and said, okay, Jose, and immediately changed my schedule. And so then I got to classes that were much more rigorous, and I was actually learning some things in high school. I got involved with kids and doing things, and I used to skip school a lot. I really couldn't see a need to graduate from high school because all the people I knew were dropping out left and right and going to work. And I had a perception or an idea that I would live in the same neighborhood my parents lived in because my brother had graduated from high school, but he lived down the street. So you get that idea that everybody was supposed to move back there and live there, and it didn't matter if you had a high school diploma or not. So at 17, my dad and I talked, And he said I was better off at work than I was on the street skipping school. And so I still remember we went to the high school, and the principal tried to convince him not to take me out of school. And my dad basically told him, he said, look, if you can't keep him in here, I don't want him on those streets. He has to be doing something, and so he might as well go to work. And so reluctantly, he took me out, and I went to work. My first job was putting sticks in the wieners so that you could make corn dogs out of them. To this day, I have a tough time looking at a corny dog. But, then, you know, and those were the kinds of things that I was involved in. I love music, so I was singing with a band. And so weekends I'd work during the week, and then on weekends I'd go singing with the band. So I stayed pretty busy, and I stayed completely out of trouble because I realized that the busier I was, the less time I had to get involved in things that could cause me a lot of trouble.
Eventually you got drafted into the Army, and then you got your GED in the Army. What did those years in the Army teach you?
Well, you know, I tell people the Army was kind of like parochial school again. You know, in parochial school, there's a tremendous amount of structure and expectations. And in the Army, it's basically the same thing. There's a tremendous amount of structure, and there are expectations. Everybody's expected to do their job. Everybody's expected to do their job to the best of their abilities. And so I really enjoyed the Army. I loved the structure. Everything there. And one of the things that I truly enjoyed was the fact that I was able to be mixed with people from all walks of life, from all educational levels. And, you know, you couldn't tell the difference as to who was who because, you know, everybody wore the same uniforms and everybody had a lot of the same jobs regardless. But it was a tremendous experience for me and a life-changing experience for me because I came back a completely different person in terms of my perception of the world.
We're talking to Richard Marquez, and I'm Jack Grisula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Richard Marquez, who earned ultimately a BA degree in history and an MA degree in public school administration from North Texas State University. And at age 28, you become a teacher. Why and how?
Well, it was kind of interesting. I had to pick a major, and my brother had just graduated a few years earlier. He was in a Marine, and we both went to school on the GI Bill. And he chose teaching. I had a sister who was a nun, and she was a teacher. So it seemed the obvious choice. And so I decided to become a teacher. And my first job was at Edison Middle School, and I really enjoyed the classroom. I enjoyed the kids. I enjoyed the classroom. It was a lot of fun for me, and I know if it was a lot of fun for me, it was a lot of fun for them. It was just I realized then that I had made the right decision because I didn't mind doing things, and I didn't mind doing anything the principal asked me to do. The second year, I went to Griner Middle School, and I remember he asked me to drive the school bus in the morning and in the afternoon, and I did. And then he asked me to run the lunchroom, three lunch periods, and I did. So my schedule ran two bus routes in the morning, three history classes, the lunchroom for an hour and a half, hour and 40 minutes, two more more history classes, and then hop on two different bus routes to take the kids home, and then I'd get to go home. And it was kind of interesting because most people would have complained, but I didn't have a problem with it, and it just seemed like the right thing to do. I made extra money riding the bus, you know, on the bus, and so, you know, and I did not mind running that lunchroom. As a matter of fact, I learned so much about kids just being in that lunchroom with them and talking to them daily on a regular basis. And people would often comment that it was the cleanest lunchroom they'd ever seen in a middle school. And it was all because I figured out a way to get them motivated to clean up after themselves. After that, I got into the administrator program, and I became an assistant principal at back at Griner, and spent 2 years there, and did something very interesting, Jack. You know, in the old days when we had corporal punishment, I convinced the principal at Griner. I was assistant principal in charge of the seventh graders. I convinced the principal that I should not give the kids three swats, that I should only hit them one time with that board. And she asked me, she said, explain to me why you should be the only one that gives one lick and the rest of us give three. And I looked at her and I said, Miss Hodge, you see this board? And she said, yeah. If I told you that I was going to hit your child with this board three times, how would you feel about that? And it struck her all of a sudden. And I said, three licks is a beating. One lick is discipline. It's expedient, but it's discipline. And off the kid goes. Three licks, you're trying to break the child's spirit. And that's not what good discipline's about. She allowed me to do it. And for the rest of my career, that's all I ever gave the kids. And, you know, I got so much respect from them because I gave them one lick, but I would spend time explaining, like a good parent, why I would give it. I worked at Sunset Skyline High School, where we had 4,000 students. And my first year there, I was in charge of all 1,250 freshmen. So I had to discipline 1,250 freshmen. You can imagine 1,250 14-year-olds who are always late to class, who can't open their lockers, who are always losing their books. And so let me tell you, you learn so much about kids and how to discipline them when you're dealing with that kind of population, and how to work with them. The teachers would tell me, they'd say, I don't know what you do to these kids. They think the world of you, and they hate coming to your office. And I would tell them, I said, it's because they understand that teachers are always right, that no matter what you do, even though you're wrong sometimes, I can't let them know that you're not the best person out there. Because if I say anything negative about any of you, they're going to immediately fall into that whole aspect that they're going to tell you that I don't think you're any good. And that cannot happen for children. They have to believe that the person in the room is trying to do the best they can for them. And so I've adhered to that forever. Children do not need to know adults' frailties. We're not perfect. But after that, I went to Ensign Jones Elementary School. I was at Skyline 3 years. Went to Ensign Jones Elementary, ran that for a couple of years, and another wonderful experience. I had a school with 950 elementary kids. The school was originally built for 350 kids. So the rest of the kids, 600 of them, were in portable buildings. And the school only had two restrooms, and they were inside the building. So the kids were constantly lined up in the hall, going to the restroom to drink water. Or they were lined up to go to the lunchroom, because the lunchroom was a little postage stamp. And so I would tell people all the time, I said, well, at Ensign Jones, we usually just pee and eat, because that's usually where the kids are. But in the 2 years I was there, the test scores took straight up, because I was constantly in the classroom visiting teachers. And out of the clear blue, I'm having a ball my second year. The school's on autopilot. My golf game is getting great. And the superintendent calls me in, Dr. Linus Wright, and sits me down and says, you're going to Sunset High School, and you're going to go fix it. And I look at him and I go, boss, I've just been at Ensign Jones 2 years. And he said, I'm not asking you. He said, I'm telling you, you're going to Sunset High School. I said, yes, sir. You just tell me when to be there, I'll be there. And so I went to Sunset. And Sunset was a typical urban school going through transition. Primarily minority kids, African-American and Hispanic, had about 25% Anglo kids that came from a little affluent area in the Oak Cliff area called Kessler Park. The The population of students was 1,600 kids, and 950 of them were freshmen. Can you imagine? 950 of that 1,600 were freshmen. There were only 200 kids in the graduating class. And when I tracked the data, there had been 500 students who had started together, and over 60% of them were already gone, and or were backed up still into seventh grade. I had some 17 and 19-year-old ninth graders. So you can imagine putting them in a regular classroom with the other kids. So the first year was just trying to get control of the place. And what I realized, Jack, is that good schools run in good classrooms. If you want to fix a school, you have to fix the classroom, because the majority of your discipline problems with children come from what happens in that classroom. If the experience in that classroom is valid and worthwhile, the child will not give you any trouble. If the experience in the classroom is bad, the child is frustrated, they're upset, and anything sets them off, and you're going to have problems. So I would set about every day to walk my school and walk into classrooms. And I was constantly talking to the teachers about the delivery of their instruction. Things like, you cannot sit behind your desk. You have to help the kids while they do their work. You have to walk around and monitor and find the kid that's having a problem. I will not tolerate you sitting behind your desk. You have to do your lesson plans. You can't teach something unless you have a plan for it. And your plan must follow the correct research-based model. I would tell them you have to give the kids time limits. You can't give children open-ended things to do. If you have an assignment, it must have a time limit. If you give them a test, the test must have a time limit. You can't let them take the whole period and waste a tremendous amount of time. What I found in the research was that in most classrooms across the country, only 20 to 25 minutes of actual teaching time occurs in a one-hour period. So if the majority of the period is wasted with teachers doing things that have no real value and sitting behind their desks while the kids are basically trying to do everything on their own, that's why you run into problems, and that's why schools become bad schools. So I relied on the research, and in a matter of 2 years had already transferred out 50 teachers without a problem, and hired a bunch of new people. I went to the University of Texas at Arlington, and I convinced them to give me all their new student teachers. And before long, I had some of the sharpest kids working at the school. The best thing you can give a child, Jack, is a good teacher.
We're talking to Richard Marquez. When we come back, we'll ask him, what makes a great teacher? And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now, back to Anything is Possible with Jack Crisula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Richard Marquez. Richard, what makes a great teacher?
Well, the first thing that makes a great teacher is a wanting to be a teacher, understanding what it is and the value of it. And then understanding the kids, the children who are in front of you, these people who are motivated by you, they don't come in self-motivated, Jack. The majority of humans in the world are not self-motivated. They need motivation. So the teacher has to have a good, solid base, but a wonderful attitude about being there. You know, I used to tell my teachers all the time, if I walk past you down the hall and you're not smiling, that means you don't like it here. So if you don't like something here, then this is transcending to the kids. You know, I could teach teachers how to teach, Jack. I learned how to do that. So if I found somebody with a great attitude, I'd hire them long before I'd hire somebody with a lot of credentials, because I realized that the people who wanted to do the work were always much, much better than the ones who had studied to do the work. They had knowledge, but the problem was they couldn't translate it to the kids. There's a way of communicating with children, with students. If you cannot make that connection, all the information you have in your head and everything you're trying to impart on them is lost. If you cannot get them to attend to what you want to teach them and you can't give it value, then it's never going to work. Just standing in front of them and spouting a bunch of facts to them isn't going to get them to learn.
We're talking to Richard Marquez. Richard, since 2007, you've been the president/CEO of Texans Ken, which consists of 10 charter high schools in 5 cities throughout Texas. Tell us about that system.
Well, yeah, you have to remember that I'm a lifelong educator. As a matter of fact, I was the advisor to the United States Secretary of Education in Washington, D.C. on the whole area of dropout prevention because of the work we did at Sunset. And so I took on Texans Can, to be honest with you, it was kind of a selfish deal, and I'll explain that to you in a little bit. But I came to Texans Can. It's a charter school. And what it does is it deals with students from 14 to 21 who are on the verge, who have failed in the traditional system, are on the verge of dropping out or have dropped out, have all these social ailments, all these other kinds of things that have gotten in the way of them getting their high school diploma. So it's we have about 4,000 kids, but we provide, Jack, one of the best educational models in the country. We have one teacher for every 15 students. All our teachers are certified, and we hire them based on attitude. We have one counselor or social worker for every 90 students. We have one adult for every 6 to 7 kids. There's a constant human interaction occurring in our schools. It's a wonderful environment, and the kids will tell you how wonderful it is. They wear uniforms, which I definitely buy into, and the kids eventually do also. We have zero tolerance on discipline because it's their last chance. And we tell them, if you put forth the effort and you behave yourself, you'll get everything you need to get you through school. So it's a great place. It's a wonderful place. I tell people, you know, when kids come to this place, we don't have any barriers or anything. When they walk in that front door, we don't care who their parents are, where they grew up. We don't want to know anything about them other than they're there to get their high school diploma. And we enroll every one of them the minute they come to the door. I tell staff, you know, when kids have hope, the last word they want to hear is no. When they show up at that door with hope in their eyes, we enroll them and we give them their best shot. And we do the best they can for them. So we won't tolerate students with their heads down in the classroom. If their head is down, something's wrong, so we send them to the social worker so that they attend to all of their academic issues. Our academics are based on a simple component, but probably the most profound one. Humans' abilities to succeed in school are directly related to one thing, Jack, reading. Your ability to read, write, and think define your ability to succeed in school. Absent those aspects, you're going to fail, or you're going to struggle, or you're going to struggle getting through school no matter what. Because absent the reading at depth and understanding where you hit the thinking components, it's going to be very difficult for you to overcome those issues. And that's when I realized that the nuns did for me more than anything else. Even though I realized that I was a struggling reader at third grade, they didn't give up on it. They made me learn to read. You know, if we taught children how to read, it would alleviate a lot of our academic problems and a lot of our problems with our kids not succeeding in school. So that's the whole center of what we do at the Khan Academy. And the reason I said it was selfish is because I developed a system for teaching reading and thinking. It's called Thinking Through Reading Across the Curriculum, so that it can be used in every subject area, because every subject area has reading in it. I don't know how old you are, Jack, but when I was growing up, we used to read in class out loud all the time. And I didn't realize how powerful it was, because the interesting dynamic is, if kids are reading in class out loud and everybody's listening, everybody's catching what's being read, and you're actually in learning how to read in depth, and you're getting a better understanding of what it is that's being read. The other thing I remember is that the nuns would always make us render our opinions. We didn't just read and that was all. They'd start asking questions. Well, I look back, and these were nuns educated in Ireland, which means they learned using Socratic questioning. So I incorporate that into the whole process. And so, interestingly enough, the kids now call it Marquez reading. They've cut across. I guess it was a lot easier saying that than saying thinking through reading across the curriculum. But we're having dramatic success with teaching children who enter reading third grade and fourth grade levels, getting them through high school. As a matter of fact, every year for the past 3 years, we've increased the number of kids we're graduating. Last year, we graduated 1,000 students. This year, we're on track to graduate about 1,100. And every year, we keep getting better academically, and every year, we keep getting better overall. We're one of the most solid financial organizations in the state of Texas. While everybody in the state is worried about cutting positions and cutting teachers, as a matter of fact, nationally, we're not cutting any of our services to our kids. We even run, in three of our schools, we run child care facilities for our students so that if they have kids, they can bring them to school with them. And it's paid a tremendous dividend. We're out trying to raise more money to put one in every one of our schools because we realize the dividend that it pays to be able to keep a girl, a young lady, and a young man in school. Plus, we open up our early childhood development centers to the community so that if people in the community can come leave their children with us because we provide great childhood development. We have a curriculum there that's out of SMU. We don't babysit. We are actually teaching those kids from the minute we get them. So, I mean, it's a wealth of huge organizational knowledge, and there's a tremendous amount of caring that goes on in the place. We treat our employees the same way we treat the kids. We've actually hired some people who have in their past had some kind of problem, and the reason we do that is because we say to the world, look, we are a second-chance school. And so if we are a second-chance school, even the people we hire deserve a second chance as long as they didn't commit, as long as they didn't beat their wives, have problems with their children, with kids, reasonable things that people do when they're young and get into trouble. If they've overcome it, we hire them. We had a Teach for America teacher who the Dallas Independent School District wouldn't hire because she had something on her record from being a juvenile. And the kid is now a science major. She's graduated from college. She's got almost a straight A average. And they wouldn't hire her because she did something when she was a teenager. Well, we hired her up in a minute because who else to work with our type of student than a human who's had trouble and has overcome it?
We're talking to Richard Marquez. If you want to learn more, www.texanscan.org. Texanscan.org. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Richard Marquez, one of 14 children from West Dallas, Texas, who dropped out of school at age 17 and is now a national leader in giving kids a second chance. Your mission statement at Texans Ken says that you want to take at-risk youth and their families to achieve economic independence and hope for a better life through relationship-based education and training. What is relationship-based education?
Well, that's when people care about you and teach you values and teach you character and develop you as a solid human being, both academically and socially. You have to learn how to be a good human from other humans, Jack. It's not, it doesn't come in your genes. It comes through interacting with good, decent people who care about you and who put forth that example on how to be a good human being. And that's what we do. We provide those examples to our students who have lacked them in their own environments.
Why don't we do that for every kid in America, Richard?
Because we have this idea, Jack, that the good Lord has already determined what's going to happen to these children, that no matter what we do, there's nothing we can do for them. It's this whole issue of social Darwinism. Schools operate under the idea that the kids actually self-select each other as to who's going to succeed and who isn't, that the teachers have no, that they're powerless to motivate these kids and to do anything with them or for them. The average American child goes to high school and minds their own business, does what they're supposed to do, graduates, and nobody ever knows who that kid was. Nobody talks to you in schools. That's why you have all this bullying, because the kids basically are running the darn place, doing whatever it is they want to do to each other, and kids are cruel, and the adults don't intervene and talk to children. If you ask most kids today how often the teacher just basically talks to them in the hallway, says hello to them, bothers to even comment and say good things to them, they'll tell you it doesn't happen. There's no human interaction occurring in schools. That's the way I changed my school. Every kid in the school thought that I knew them by name. I didn't, but they all thought I did. And that's that whole aspect of it. In some schools, some high schools, the kids don't even know what the principal's name is. And it seems implausible to even think that, but it's actually true. They don't even know who their counselor is. We have one counselor for every 400 students, but the counselor never even has time to deal with any of those kids. Counselors are usually in the office, never in the halls, never in the lunchroom, never out in front before school, so greeting parents and greeting kids, never after school saying bye to the kids and finding out what kind of a day they had. They're locked up in an office. And most people in schools are locked up in offices. Ask the kids how often the principal comes by the classroom. Some kids are lucky. They'll say the principal's there every day. The majority of the kids will tell you they don't see them because the system has locked itself in to believe that no matter what they do, only a certain amount of kids are going to graduate from high school.
Well, talk to us about teachers' unions and tenure for teachers.
Well, it's like anything else, Jack. The world doesn't have good work is what keeps your job. Your ability to do your job and to care about your job and take care of your job is what keeps your job. I'm a history major, so I understand why unions came about. And let me tell you, they came about for a good reason. But now they've gone the other end. They're protecting people who don't do their jobs for the sake of saying that if they allow that to happen, then the good people will lose theirs. Well, you know, it's gone too far to one end. Yes, labor was abusive of people and did do all kinds of bad things. Now the union's the one who's doing all the bad things. It's about the kids. You cannot protect people who are damaging children. You know, if they build a bad chivvy and file a grievance, they may be able to keep their job. But if they're damaging children on a daily basis, it can't be tolerated. Humans are too valuable to us, Jack. They're not widgets. They are intellectual properties that we need to cherish and care for. I constantly tell people, no child ever selected their parent. What child ever wanted, how many of us wanted to live in the neighborhoods we were grown up in? I'd have loved to have grown up in a better neighborhood, been number one instead of number nine, had all kinds of things, but that's not how it works. We don't get to select, but good people around us make us good people. And so that's a lot of what's occurring in the public schools today. Teachers don't have to care because their union is going to take care of them. It's gotten to the point of being ridiculous. And the union isn't even being proactive, helping the teachers get better. If the union was really doing their job, they'd be visiting the classrooms and checking on those teachers and saying, you're making the union look bad. You need to leave. you know, all our other people are doing what they're supposed to be doing, and you're making us all look bad. And do you realize that in some states you have to spend over $300,000 in legal fees to get rid of a bad teacher? So they take them and they stick them in rooms in some school somewhere, and they just report to that room for the rest of their careers and do nothing, while you and I pay for them out of our taxes. It's ridiculous. And American people need to be incensed by the fact that their children are being held hostage by tenure agreements. If they're bad, they're bad. Get rid of them. They're bad employees, Jack. That's all there is to it.
As our time winds down tonight, Richard, what advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
What I would say to them is, look, don't give up on school. Don't give up on learning and growing, but learn to read. Go find somebody to teach you how to read. It can be done. You can teach kids who are 16, 17, and 18 and struggling can be taught to read. They need to learn how to read and think, because those two things will overcome all of the barriers in front of them. Absent that, it's going to be a struggle. And if they don't learn to read, they may wind up just being on the streets the rest of their life and causing us and everybody else around us all types of problems. They care, Jack. Children do care. Children do want to succeed, but they don't know who to talk to, and they don't. Go find somebody. Find somebody you can talk to. Find somebody who will at least take the time to listen to you, and you can share your things with, and they can share with you and direct you in the right direction. It's all about humans. Go find that human. There's a human out there who wants to help you. Go find them.
Richard Marquez, you've changed the lives of tens of thousands of such kids. Thanks a million. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spawn.